Like to call into session the March 22nd, 2011 session of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. We are in order. Folks, just a set of announcements here. Once again, and this is extremely frustrating, we have not had a number of fiscals. So House Bill 3207, we are not going to be working that bill today for lack of a fiscal. We are not going to be working House Bill 2848 for lack of a fiscal as well. In addition, if you're here for HJM 11, you were looking at the old schedule, so we're not doing that one. And House Bill 3208, which is two veterans' homes, we're going to hold that one over. So if you're here for any one of those just mentioned bills, and those bills only, we're clearing out the room. with that, stay tuned. We'll come around again. Those bills will be back. All right. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3416. I'll ask the administrator to please read the bill.
House Bill 3416 establishes World War II Task Force to arrange for the development, design, and construction of a memorial to honor Oregon's World War II veterans. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have a witness sign-up sheet on this one? Thank you very much. Okay, 3416. Here we go. All right, I have signed up Paula Brown and Mike Burton, and as you're coming forward, I'd just like to note for the record that we received a letter of support from Major Paul Evans of Monmouth. So with that, I'm sorry. Yes, Representative. I was going to say welcome before our committee, but welcome to the witness stand.
I appreciate being part of the committee, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews. I'm a state representative out of House District 50, which is the great city of Gresham. Proud to be here today before you to bring to you this wonderful measure, House Bill 3416. And what this is going to do is my colleagues here at the dais with me, let me just say they've done a lot of tremendous work on this. I attended a World War II Memorial Committee meeting just last week, and I got to see what the plan is going to be. And we're coming up on what's going to be the 70th year anniversary of World War II. And this is a very important monument. Now, what I want to tell you is, in the bill, you'll see that there is a -1 amendment, and I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But I want you to disregard that for now, and I'll explain why. So I came into this because, essentially, our former governor, Ted Kulongoski, had appointed the committee, at which one of the chairs was Paul Evans. And at that time, Paul Evans was policy director, policy advisor to the governor for military or veterans affairs. Did a phenomenal job last session, and this was something they'd been working on for the interim. So why the task force? Well, because we felt like it was very important that we put the Legislative Assembly behind this process. Not only that, we encourage the work they're doing, and that we kind of emphasize the need to get it done on time. And again, I don't want to understate the importance of the work the committee's done thus far. The monument itself, the memorial, is going to be amazing. I saw last week that they have approved what that's going to look like. But before I get too far into detail, because I want to give that to the folks that really deserve to talk about it, I'd like to, if I could, Mr. Chair, read into the record the letter from Paul Evans, because I think it's very pertinent to why we're here. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, please accept this letter of support for House Bill 3416, Establishment of a World War II Memorial Task Force. This bill will formalize ongoing efforts and expedite the process to ensure Oregon meets the target of construction and dedication in calendar year 2011, the 70th anniversary of the beginning of World War II for the United States of America. As a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, I am keenly aware of the sacrifice of the greatest generation. It is to this group of people, the men and women that rebuilt the nation and defeated global tyranny, that we owe all that we are, all that we can become. It is urgent that we accomplish this last mission for the heroes of World War II. I urge this committee and the Oregon legislature to pass this measure so that we can fast-track design, development, and execution. Your leadership on this issue will make the difference. Your personal commitment to getting this done is appreciated greatly. Sincerely, Paul L. Evans, citizen. The basis for this bill really is, and not that I think there's a whole lot of controversy around it, but the question does rise, why do we spend time to discuss the bill? We do need to get this moving. We need to get this on time. And the Dash 1 amendments were an effort because I was seeing a situation where there was a little bit of a lockup and perhaps a barrier that we weren't going to be able to break through. But rather than focus on that aspect, I'm proud to say that we're very comfortable as a group now that those barriers are removed and that folks are completely on board and that we're going to be able to cite this project, and not only cite this project, but expedite this process so that we can get this project done. And that really is the context of this bill, so that the Legislative Assembly can support the fine work the men and women are doing to bring this task force to light and to bring this memorial true. So with that being said, Mr. Chair, the Dash 1s we are not proposing at this time. They were just simply part of the record because that was an avenue we thought we'd go down to expedite this process. However, again, I feel as if we've got everybody now speaking the same language and on the same time commitment. So with that being said, I'll pass it to some very fine people that work on veterans issues all the time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Burton. I'm here in support of House Bill 3416. Attached to my written testimony, there's a letter which was written by Governor Kulongoski in January 2011, which appointed Jim Willis, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and myself to head up an effort to try to build up a World War II memorial. One of the reasons for that is that Oregon is one of the few states in the Union that does not have a World War II memorial on its Capitol grounds. Governor Kulongoski, at the Veterans Policy Advisor Paul Evans, as Representative Matthews pointed out, convened the World War II Memorial Planning Committee with a goal of developing a World War II memorial on the grounds of the state capitol. As the planning committee met, the group determined that it should have legislative authority as a task force to do its work. And this bill before you, and we thank Representative Matthews for introducing this bill. The planning committee included members of the Governor's Task Force on Veterans Affairs, the Capitol Foundation, representatives of several state agencies, and individuals from several veterans associations. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Director Jim Willis agreed to provide staff assistance for the committee. A particular note is that former state representative Bill Markham and Art Sorensen, both World War II vets, serve on the committee and were asked to be honorary chairs of this effort. Both of these individuals stressed the importance of moving this effort forward as quickly as possible, as World War II veterans are dying at a rate of more than 1,000 a day. While it may seem as if we've put the cart before the horse, the Planning Committee has made important progress during the past several months. A location has been determined with the outstanding help and support of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The memorial will be placed on the Capitol grounds at the corners of Court and Cottage Streets. We've also established a design, a five-sided obelisk, and actually I have some rough drafts that aren't really releasable to the public, but I'd be pleased to give them to the committee members so you can get some concept of what we're doing here. It'll be 33 feet high, which is symbolic in the fact that Oregon's the 33rd state, with a map of the world on the ground. The memorial will have a wall containing the names of the 3,757 Oregonians who lost their lives in World War II, and other historic information about the war's efforts, the sacrifices made on the home front, and the heroic efforts made by Oregonians, and everything from building victory ships down in the Kaiser shipyards to the victory gardens in everyone's backyard. We have a lot more work to do to make the memorial a reality. First, this project will be funded by soliciting private funds, roughly $600,000. However, the memorial is 65 years late in the making. World War II veterans and their families deserve this honor, before that greatest generation leaves us. We're excited that the memorial will not only honor World War II veterans, but will stand for generations to educate Oregonians about this incredible period in our history and the very future of our nation and the world was at stake. I thank the committee for considering this legislation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. I think they're bringing you around. That's a just a very rough schematic. If I could add, as Representative Matthews mentioned, at the last meeting of this planning committee with everybody present, we agreed on a design. When the schematics were shown, and the ones that we showed were bigger than this, to the members, I asked the World War II vets that were there what they thought about it. And Art Sorensen, who I cited there, who is a World War II vet from, I think, 104th or 109th Division, that 104th Division, that was an Oregon division that played a heavy part in World War II. We asked him what he thought about it, and he said he loved it. It's just so I thought that's who it's supposed to be for, and so the design is decided, and we're moving forward with trying to get this into a reality.
Very good. That's a very appealing design.
The object, I think, of everybody was to make it elegant and simple, and that was the idea. So
it appears that you've accomplished that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Paula.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 3416, which would create a World War II Memorial Task Force. More than 152,000 Oregonians served in World War II, and today less than 30,000 are still with us. The bill to create the World War II Memorial Task Force and the work the task force will do to provide a tribute to the World War II generation is important. It's important to veterans. It's important to their families. It's important to us in this state so that we do not forget the sacrifices all Oregonians and Americans made during World War II. This memorial will touch people. It will touch people for many, many, many years to come. Nearly every Oregonian has a family member or someone they knew who was either in the war or a part of the war effort. That is how engulfing World War II was. And it's fitting that when Oregonians come and see this memorial, they can think about the heroes they've known from the great generation. Director Willis is excited about leading this effort with Mike Burton and all the members of the task force. And as you've heard already, some very good work has been done to develop the concept, and the task force is eager to continue its work to complete this outstanding project. Director Willis regretted that he wasn't able here to testify in person. He's actually working with the state directors of Veterans Affairs across the nation on some important veterans issues. I want to thank this committee for its support, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you all very, very much for bringing this this most important bill forward. And I just repeat, that is an absolutely beautiful schematic here that you have. It's touching. So, with that, questions or comments from the committee? Representative Esquivel, co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This generation that we're losing, and because of age, is a very special generation. My father-in-law ran away to Canada and joined the Canadian Air Force and was in the Battle of Britain before the United States ever got in the war. Had his 25 missions in, and once the Army Air Corps came in, he ended up being the personal pilot for General Doolittle. So there's so many stories that these people can tell, and I hope that we have some way to record some of these stories, because it would be fantastic if you could press a button and get different stories from World War II at this memorial. Is there any way we can do that?
Mr. Co-Chair, Esquivel, we actually discussed that at one of our meetings, is how do we log all of these great stories and so they're not lost? And one of the things I'd like to explore with this as we develop it is some means to do that. Capturing the information, getting the stories is the first thing, no matter what we do, and then being able to display that. And if there's a means which we can do it practically to have some sort of electronic display out on the grounds that people could, you know, if you've been to with some other memorials or Ellis Island, for example, you can go in and find stories in there. I can't tell you how much that would cost or what it would be, but it's certainly, I think, what I'm concerned about is that some high school student 20 years from now coming up there and saying, what's this all about, and not being able to see those stories, which will then mean something. So that's very much in my mind, and we'll take a look at how we might achieve that.
Paul,
please.
I would encourage that very, very much, because those men and women at that era have so much to offer to our society, and we do not want to forget what kind of a job they did, not only for the world, but for America.
Mr. Chair and Representative Esquivel, to your point, I had the privilege of going through the Oklahoma City bombing memorial, and it just struck me as I was just awestruck. Such a tragedy, and the way they've captured that is similar to what you're talking about. The challenge would be we're outdoors, but also funding. But beyond that, what they've done there is there are real life stories, but they've given you as a person that's visiting an opportunity to say where you were at this point in time and what your recollection was. And they've done that by computer. So when other visitors come, they see not only what some did that were impacted, but what others did that have visited. The other thing they've done is they've put names, of course, and then they have research stations where you're able to research by name what these folks had done. In the cases of the children that passed, it's unfortunate and it's devastating, but you hear or you read that 6-month-old, you know, this and this and this, loved to play with this and that, and it's just an incredible memorial. So your idea would be fascinating to be able to do that, and I completely agree. Whether folks were in the theater of war, they were here building ships, and my wife's grandmother, she had done that. So there's just an amazing generation, and we don't want to lose this piece of history simply by time. We've already lost a lot of it.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, thank you. Get a hold of Jan, because she knows a couple of organizations that are getting this information and these stories from World War II veterans, and maybe they could shed some light on. And I would like to see is something you could press a button and you could get a story from, you know, so-and-so that was a pilot from Alabama that served as a B-17 bombardier or something of that nature, and let them tell a little bit about what their part of the war was.
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Esquivel, I'll put a little personal story in here as well. When I started in this process, I knew I have a half-brother who's older and passed away now, but he was in World War II, and I, because families were separated, I wasn't sure what the story was, so I got a hold of his son and said, what do you know about your dad? And it turns out he was a B-17 navigator, and he sent a photograph of me, and he had tech sergeant stripes. And I said, well, that's interesting, because normally the navigators were officers. Well, they were going out at such a rate, apparently, that they gave him a field promotion, let him start navigating the plane. And then right after the war was over with, he went back to his former rank. But he had some stories.
For the war.
He had a bunch of relevant, those kind of stories. But I hadn't felt as close to that since, trying to find out a little bit more about my brother. And unfortunately, he's of a lot of that generation that didn't talk to very many people. You know, he got this. It was my dad who told him that, and then he told his grandson, and that's how it got passed down, because he just never talked about his experiences. We had to kind of piece it together. And some pretty incredible, interesting stories. I hope we can do this. And you said to talk to whom? Because I... Oh, your wife. I'm sorry. Okay, get off. I don't know. Jan, right?
That's her father.
Got it.
Please. That's her dad was, and he's still alive. He's in Montana. He's 92 years old.
Wow.
And he's the only one left of his squadron. And like I said, he has lots of stories. He gave a guy a ride into London one time, and it was his second to last ride the man ever took, because the guy's name was Captain Miller, as in Glenn Miller. So it was the next flight that Glenn Miller took that he never made it to France. So this has got some interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's important that we capture some of this history, because to the extent that it is a personal testimonial, I think it may make it okay for other veterans who have found it difficult to talk about their history to do so. And I think of my own father's experience where he never really wanted to talk about it. And then, you know, as he was approaching, you know, the final days, you'd like to get all that oral history down. And he was at a stage at that point where Alzheimer's was to the stage that he couldn't even remember the succession, the island succession that he'd been through in the Pacific. And it's terribly unfortunate that I and the rest of the world was not able to capture that history. And as I said, I think that by others doing it, it makes it easier for individuals to come forward with that history. So I very much applaud the addition of that to your project as well. Representative Huffman, I know you wanted to jump in here.
This is an awesome project. I just thought it was a shame that due to funding shortages that because of the stature of Paul Evans and Representative Matthews that they're going to have to hoist that pinnacle up on their backs themselves. And I just thought maybe we could do something to help.
Budget cutback, Representative.
Other than that, I'm there pushing you on.
By the way, my wife is my chief of staff.
I thank you very much.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. If I could add just a comment to what Representative Huffman said, and I noticed there's a subsequent to Ways and Means. Having served in this chamber, I understand why that may be necessary, but I do want to emphasize that the money for this will all be voluntary. So the budget impact and the fact that Representative Willis has volunteered some of his staff time may have some small, I'm sure not small, but some impact on them. But this really is something, hopefully it doesn't get hung up down there in that chamber. And the last thing is to mention Representative Matthews demurred on his amendment. Actually, I kind of liked his amendment. That's off camera here because I'd really hate to see, we really have come a long way in getting agreement on this, the site location, and hopefully there's no process that pops up out there somewhere in the bureaucratic bushes that would slow this down, because again, I think we've got consensus, we've got agreement, and we really need to move forward. And we really thank the Capital Foundation for providing the 501c3 aspect of this. It's all really kind of in place. We just need to get out and get going with the fundraising. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And Representative Matthews, if we could impose upon you to maybe you and or Mike to go down to legislative fiscal and make sure that they know where this money's coming from.
Mr. Chair, duly noted. It certainly will, and I would say as well that I certainly hope that doesn't become a problem. It will be privately funded, and that shouldn't be the problem. I also hope that I guess what I would say is when it comes to citing this and getting the permits, let's say, as I've told kids that I've coached in the past, rules are for everybody, not everybody else. And I understand there's rules to be in place, but there's also the ability to expedite those rules in cases where it makes a great deal of sense. And we have that discretion within statute. And I certainly hope that that we can get that exercised. I will say to the memorial itself, as Mike explained, 33 feet is substantial. It's going to be two pieces. It's going to be marble, not imported from any other country. It's going to be five-sided. But here's what's unfortunate. As you look at the marble that's going to be the call it the floor of the granite, it'll be engraved and etched with the world. It's just going to be amazing. But because of where we're at today and because of some of the disrespect that's out there in our world, they've also had to come up with a way to put cleats along the memorial to keep skateboarders off of it, to keep rollerblades off it, to just keep vandals from doing harm. And I can tell you that it's unfortunate that we don't have enough respect for property that we don't need to spend money on that type of situation. But in Gresham, we have a Heroes Memorial, and just to my point, we had to do the same thing. And then we had to talk about fencing it. And pretty soon, you're creating so many barriers that it does exactly what you don't want it to do. It doesn't invite anybody to it. And the one in Gresham has been a gathering point for our community for all types of events. And when they're there, it is a living memorial to all of our nation's services, in addition, police and fire. And when people gather on those days, all these folks of service and their families are talking to one another about what their involvement is and what they do and what their actions were. And it's just amazing. And I picture this being out here on our property, and again, inviting and encouraging veterans. I did not serve in Vietnam. But when I went to the Vietnam Memorial, I was touched deeply. And touched by the stories, touched by the families, watching folks take a pencil and take a name of a veteran that perhaps they knew, even in some cases that they didn't, and they just decided to research. This memorial has that ability to have that kind of an impact, particularly not just to World War II memorial or World War II veterans, but to our entire state and this great nation. It's just another thing that's going to set Oregon apart that actually, unfortunately, we don't have a memorial, and it brings us up to speed, and we'll get it. So I'll be down there at Ways and Means. I'll be at the you know, fiscal, making sure we can do our best to let them know that this is zero cost to the state. We're just trying to get this thing done.
I just add the comment that if it were possible with reasonable costs to get a larger blow up of this that we could post here when we work this bill, I would love to be able to have our public audience view this, because this is truly beautiful. So, Representative Huff.
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to go to LFO with you also. More than likely, this would end up coming to our subcommittee, and
yes,
with two members of the committee,
yes,
telling LFO analysts that, you know, the story behind the story might have an impact. So, be happy to do that.
Thank you very much, Representative Huffman. I appreciate that. I appreciate that immensely. Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, just one quick thing. In the bill itself, there isn't anything that outlines that it's all, unless I've missed it someplace, that it's all private funded.
We have it, let's see.
Have I missed it?
It may be that if we need to entertain it, what we'll do is maybe take this offline, but if we need to entertain an amendment, maybe that amendment would be that the task force shall come up with a recommendation that would be, you know, privately funded and whatnot.
Because then LFO would...
Right.
Go, okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That would make it very clean. Thank you for touching that.
And Mr. Chair, just to, if you'll indulge, line 20, we'll see, coordinate fundraising efforts for the memorial,
okay,
although that doesn't spell out.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I, to your point, Representative Esquivel, thanks for pointing that out. We'll see what we need to do to make that happen and bring in clarity.
Good catch. Thank you. Was anything further? Thank you all very, very much for your tremendous work. This is absolutely a stunning memorial. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing.
Work on those.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3416, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8. If the administrator would please read the bill.
House Joint Memorial 8 urges Congress to require the United States Armed Forces to investigate cultural barriers and provide proposed solutions.
Okay, and with that, I'd like to call up, Mike Burton.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Burton, and in this hat, I am the chair of the Legislative Interim Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. I'm here today in support of House Joint Memorial 8, which urges Congress to mandate the Pentagon examine military cultural barriers to service members' self-reporting crisis. During the past 3 years, Oregon has had four separate task forces examine veterans' issues. While each task force has done important work, resulting in important legislation from this body, there's an area which continues to escape our grasp. Simply put, military culture in and of itself is a barrier to service members' self-reporting crises, such as suicidal ideation, post-traumatic stress disorder, self-medicating and drugs and alcohol and physical disabilities, marital and legal trouble, and more. The Reintegration Task Force wrestled with this issue and asked itself if one really could change the military warrior culture to accommodate self-reporting, which on the surface seems to contradict the culture itself.
Military culture prizes strength, courage, leadership, commitment, adaptability, and resiliency. For a service member, admitting you have a problem is akin to admitting you're weak. The military has zero defect mentality, and if you are ineffective, you are no longer useful. And I'll go off script here for a minute. Anyone who's been through any type of military training, and I've been through a lot, everything from flight training to your commando school to special ops trainings to various survival training and other types of things, it's always stressed on you that you never give up, you never leave anybody behind. And that's the most important thing you can remember if you're in any kind of situation. Getting away from that then when you're in back into the other world is sometimes a difficult thing to forget. The task force acknowledged that the top leaders in the military, including the Oregon National Guard, are encouraging troops to let someone know if they're struggling, and it's okay to seek help. However, the task force continued to hear stories of service members not reporting for a number of reasons, including fear of losing their job or being medically boarded out of the military, not wanting to let their team down, not wanting to be seen as weak, peer pressure from others who had experienced the same events but were not struggling, direct superiors who would not support them if they did self-identify. Newspaper articles and anecdotal stories and first-hand experiences convinced the task force that there is a disconnect between the commanders who are encouraging self-identifying and troops who are reluctant to report. During last week's reintegration summit, Command Sergeant Major Bronk Connolly hit the nail on the head when he admitted that it doesn't matter what senior commanders says if the company commanders and the first sergeants do not implement the policies. The key to eliminating barriers is first identifying them and then getting company commanders, first sergeants, platoon leaders, and even squad leaders to embrace policies and procedures that allow service members to seek help when needed. Clearly, there's a problem in today's military regarding this. Whether it is multiple deployments, use of National Guard as operational reserves, or simply a better recognition of problems every combat soldier has faced in every conflict in history, we know that our service members are suffering, and we believe the military culture can be a barrier to service members seeking help. And this barrier doesn't stop when the service member becomes a veteran who will still embody the age-old principle of suck it up and drive on. House Joint Memorial 8 is an attempt to shine a light on a problem that everyone knows exists but has been responded to in Washington often by saying that our troops just have to be more resilient. Resiliency is important, but also eliminating barriers to seeking help when one needs it is also important. Well, thank you for considering HJM 8 today, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Anything from the committee? Not seeing anything. Okay. Thank you very much,
thank
Mike.
You.
Certainly appreciate that. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify on House Joint Memorial 8 at this point? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 8 and open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 15. And if I might please have Representative Cowan come forward.
Good job.
Welcome back to as our former chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back. I am Jean Cowan. I represent House District 10 in this legislative body and am a past chair of the Veterans and Emergency Services Committee. So it's good to have an opportunity to bring an issue back to you that was sort of left hanging, I guess, last go-round. As many of you might know, for the 6 years that I've been a legislator, community-based long-term care for our seniors has been a personal priority for me and an area that I've worked on a great deal. So I was truly disappointed when I realized that Oregon's exemplary system of community-based long-term care for seniors is not necessarily reflected in the kind of opportunities that we present to our veterans. The Veterans Administration is trying to move towards community care, but the messages are a little bit mixed out there right now. I was encouraged when I viewed a PowerPoint that came out in February of 2009 from the Veterans Health Administration talking about their aging network and Veterans Health Administration partnerships and opportunities. One of the slides particularly that caught my eye read, VHA philosophy for long-term care. Provide care in the least restrictive environment whenever possible, in-home and community-based settings. Nursing home care should be reserved for situations in which the veteran can no longer be safely maintained in the home. I thought, terrific. That's what we had in mind. But it doesn't work that way as smoothly as it might. The VA has a pilot project in some states where they're paying for in-home and community-based care, but it's confusing, to say the least, in terms of eligibility, as I did some follow-up on it. And I worked specifically with the Veterans Representative and Congressman Trader's office, and I looked at this rather complex list of how eligibility is determined and that sort of thing. So let me take you back for just a moment in terms of Oregon's approach to community-based long-term care for seniors. And that is our whole spectrum of care opportunities that encourage folks to be able to take advantage of in-home care providers, which might allow you to remain in your own home, or perhaps move across the spectrum of assisted living facilities or adult foster care also in your communities. And I also recognize that there are situations in which a veteran might prefer to be housed in a situation with individuals who have had similar life experiences, and if that's a personal preference, that's great. But if it means that you have to move away from your home community where you've established other relations or might have family, close friends, whatever, in order to get the care you need, that doesn't seem right to me. And Senator or Congressman Schrader agrees with me and once again is willing to take up the cause to an issue that we bring forward to our congressional delegation. I wanted to make sure that we had that in place first because, as you might remember, we were very successful with some of the joint memorials that we moved forward because we had members of our congressional delegation who were interested in the same subject. That is why you have before you today House Joint Memorial 15, and it is urging Congress to make sure that these things go together and that it is possible that if a veteran simply needs some sort of community-based care, that those funds that might otherwise be expended for a veteran's placement in a veteran's home would be available. I might also point out that it's a cost-saving measure. It's usually always less costly for people to receive some level of care in their own homes or in their community than it is to be placed in a residential setting. And so as we go through the conversations about how many beds will we need in the long run and how many facilities do we need to build to house people in a setting that we are moving away from for every other citizen in Oregon, I think that we need to step back enough to say, is there a better way that in addition to having the facilities available when we need them, that we might also offer our veterans an opportunity for options and to receive care in their community setting? So that is what the memorial that you have before you today is, to simply recognize that little glitch in the system and to urge Congress to help the Veterans Administration understand what we need to do.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Representative Cowan? Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thanks for bringing this forward. We've talked about this until we're blue in the face, and we hope this time they listen to us in Washington, D.C., because it's so imperative that we take care of these people that we have had a dramatic effect on their life.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Tom and several others helped us to finally get a somewhat permanent resolution. It's amazing the overall disconnect there is in this topic with the feds. They spent the money 2 or 3 years ago to build a CBOC, community-based outreach clinic, in the Dalles, located next to the veterans' home. But as near as we could figure, there was never a plan to put a doctor there, or a nurse, or anybody else. It was just this building kind of sitting out there. And so the community got together, the veterans groups, and started asking, you know, how come we don't have medical care here in this clinic? And thanks to the work of a lot of people, General Caldwell, I'm sure, was involved too. I mean, it took a whole herd of us to actually get it. And we actually do have got a temporary doctor there, and now a permanent one is getting ready to come on board, maybe next month. But anyway, it's just kind of an example of what we're dealing with here on the major disconnect.
Thank you very much. Coach Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That reminds me, Representative Huffman, that there's a right way, a wrong way, and a federal government way.
Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment for the good representative who did incredible work. I really enjoyed being on the committee when she chaired the Veterans and Emergency Services. She not only brought to light a lot of issues for the veterans, but also for our communities for emergency preparedness and emergency services. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate you following up with an issue that didn't get finished last time, and we'll see if we can get it done this time. Thank you very much, and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
And I, too, want to thank you for this bill, Representative Cowan. Your positive impact on this committee and the work that we do has extended beyond your membership in this committee. So thank you very much. And I would just add that I have to presume, using Oregon's Project Independence for senior citizens at large, that were this to come to pass, and we were able to make it possible for veterans to stay in their homes to the greatest extent possible, that it would actually end up saving money to our taxpayers, saving money to the veterans and their families, and presumably also adding a great deal of dignity to folks and their living situation, perhaps in the twilight years that they're here.
Mr. Chair, if I might respond, I thank you for that comment. Absolutely, I view this as a cost-saving major, but we need to remember that Oregon Project Independence is a fine program for our Oregon seniors. It's not the only thing that we do for seniors, and it's a very, very limited program. We do have efforts afoot to modernize that statute and to allow opportunities for ways that we might do other things should funding ever become available. And among that is to make us in a better position to accept any federal assistance that might be out there to perhaps match those funds or to funnel funds to appropriately eligible individuals, and I'm sure that we can make that work with veterans as well. It really appalled me when I heard that was a program that was in place, but then we started talking about the eligibility process, that there seems to be a policy in place, but current VA funding around aid and attendance, if costs fall in the right place, and adjustments are needed, and then there's this rather interesting document around criteria for determining need for aid and dependence and, quote, permanently bedridden. We can do so much better.
Yes. Yes.
To help people understand appropriate verbiage, if nothing else, and to recognize that aging individuals are independent individuals in their own right who may have some varying needs for level of assistance, be it possible to stay in their own home with limited assistance, or, again, I want to mention that it's a spectrum, and it's assisted living facilities, it's adult foster care. There are many things available right now in our communities, and there simply isn't any reason in my mind that veterans shouldn't have the same opportunity to access those through those kinds of assistance that they're eligible to receive.
Absolutely.
So I will look forward to this coming back to a work session very soon.
We will look forward to it too, and thank you so much for bringing this memorial forward.
Thank you.
Anything further for the representative before she leaves? Thank you very, very much.
Absolutely.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to testify on House Joint Memorial 15 at this point? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 15, and I am going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 18. Jill, if you please read the bill.
House Joint Memorial 18 urges Congress to make funding of veterans health care a permanent and direct entitlement.
Thank you very much. And if I could please have Mike Sullivan come forward.
He's already here.
He's just like a leprechaun,
isn't
he? I can
see the board there.
Swift, silent,
I looked right past you, Mike. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Coach. I'm short.
Welcome, Mike. I didn't mean to do that.
That's quite all right. Good afternoon, co-chairs Escobar and Witt, and vice chairs and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, commonly known as AWPPW. I come here in total support, along with AWPPW, for House Joint Memorial 18. I would especially like to thank Co-Chair Escobar, who in the last two sessions has been chief sponsor of this memorial, which it's its fourth session now. So it's in its senior year. And it is about permanently funding veterans' health care rather than the annual basis, which has been since 1921. And back to Coach Escobar. In fact, he pre-filed it last year. However, I would like to also give great credit to former Representative Donna Nelson, who was the first chief sponsor and the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee, and, of course, Jeff Baker in 2007. In the previous sessions, this has been passed by large majorities, if not unanimously, like it was in 2009 in both chambers. I did receive some negative feelings towards House Joint Memorial 18 this time. It came in the question of, why does the VA need money? The World War veterans are about dead, and the Korean veterans are almost there. To that, I answered that perhaps this person should look at House Joint or Senate Joint Memorial 2, which is passed out of the Senate this session, 30-0. It would establish a trust fund to pay for the health care for Iraqi and Afghani veterans returning. An estimated cost, it could exceed $900 billion. I didn't say million, billion. Perhaps I could have answered it another way, as I've seen Mac McDonald do before this committee, and say a veteran is a veteran is a veteran. It makes a difference that we make the difference for veterans. After all, they made the call to this country when this country needed them. Now it's our turn to make sure that the veterans' health care is funded permanently, not annually. Please pass this out unanimously. Do pass to the floor, and I'll answer any questions there might be. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much. Questions or comments from the committee members? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mike, you said it all. Thank you. I think it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely, Mike. It's almost hard to even comprehend that we would consider this as discretionary spending. And I think that our country has made a commitment to its veterans. And I think as part of that commitment, it needs to be a direct entitlement and not a discretionary entitlement. So thank you very much for once again bringing this forward. And thank you, too, for recognizing the past efforts of members of this committee.
Thank you, Co-Chair Witt. Thank you, Representative Boone. And thank you, Co-Chair Escobar, for being the chief sponsor again and reminding us of the federal way.
Thank you very much. Anyone else on House Joint Memorial 18 today? Further testimony? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 18, And we're going to move into the work session part of our committee's business today. I am going to open a work session on House Bill 3163. And Jill, if you'd please remind us what this bill is about.
House Bill 3163 recognizes the validity of a written instrument commonly used in the armed forces for the directed disposition of a decedent's remains.
Thank you very much. And I think in common parlance, if I remember correctly, that this bill dealt with, in essence, who gets the remains, and the suggestion of the bill is that if there's an armed forces designation, that our state would honor that?
Would recognize it.
This,
yes, would recognize
it. It's to recognize Department of Defense Form 93.
Okay. Thank you very much. Committee members, discussion about this on this bill. Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that this is a pretty much cut and dry bill. If you know, we've all read the bill, we understand, you know, what this means, and it means that we're going to recognize actually the last thing that the veteran or the soldier or sailor or airman or whomever has written out on what their remains are to be taken care of and by whom. And I think it's, to me, it's almost like a last will and testament. You need to adhere by the wishes of the individual.
Very good point. Further discussion? Seeing none, committee members, what is your pleasure? Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3163 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Committee members, Co-Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 3163 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Committee members, how would you like to handle this? Is this one that is lends itself to concurrence?
Mr. Chair,
please.
I don't think so. And the reason being is because someone's going to be questioning about the remains of our warriors, and so therefore I would be happy to carry the bill with the committee if they so desire.
Very good. I appreciate that. Co-Chair Esquivel, we will assign you to carry that bill. Thanks very much. Anything further? I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3163 and open a work session on House Bill 3500. Jill, if you'd remind us once again.
House Bill 3500 directs the Oregon Military Department to report to the Legislative Committee about military culture barriers to successful reintegration and recommend legislation for eliminating the barriers by October 1st, 2014.
Thank you very much. We have heard a little bit additional on this topic earlier today. Further discussion? I'm not seeing any. I'm sorry.
Do you need a move? Want to move this?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll recognize Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3500 to be moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel moves House Bill 3500 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Let's see here. What's your pleasure on this one? Would you like a carrier?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we should ask Representative Doherty, since it's her bill, to move that, to carry it to the floor, because I know she would be honored to do so.
Very good. Thank you for that that suggestion. Appreciate that. And we'll ask Representative Doherty if she'll carry that. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3500 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 6. Jill?
House Joint Memorial 6 urges Congress to require the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to pay veterans transportation costs in certain circumstances, and this is regarding transportation from a hospital to the VA hospital.
All right. Thank you very much. Discussion on the bill, committee members? I can't restrain myself. My understanding is this addresses an instance where a non-veterans hospital would transport a veteran to VA facilities, and then for whatever reason, the VA doesn't pay for the transportation. And I don't understand it. I don't get it. So, Vice Chair Esquivel. Co-Chair Esquivel, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Mr. Chair, I think what this, I mean, I'm going to give you a great example. We have a veteran in Medford that has to go to Portland, but it's an emergency situation to the Veterans Hospital. If you put him on Mercy flights, what they want to do is the VA wants to charge the veteran instead of paying for that flight. And that's just plumb silly.
It boggles my mind. I just can't even fathom that this
right way, wrong way, better way. That's my case.
Thank you. I think you've made the point very well, Representative Matthews.
I just want to state, and I'm supportive. I think this is a great concept and well needed. But I have been, as you know, being a firefighter, I've been on a call with a veteran who was having a cardiac emergency. The Veterans Hospital was red, coral status red, meaning they're not accepting patients. The wife of the veteran said, please do not take my husband. We can't afford to go through this process again.
Yeah.
And what had happened was, and thank goodness, the Department of Veterans Affairs took care of it, but it was a private ambulance company that was not getting reimbursed for the transport through the VA that was then all of a sudden they didn't get to the point of putting a lien on, but they threatened the veteran and his wife to do so. And I'm going to tell you now, I obviously take an issue. When we talk healthcare reform, we've got a long way to go.
Yes, we do.
And it's a system that's abused often, and it's not being abused by our veterans, and it's not being abused by our elderly community. And when those folks are making life and death decisions on their inability to cope with the repercussion of using the system, it just bothers me greatly. So anything we can do to get that straightened out, but I wanted to say on the record, it was our Department of Veterans Affairs that took care of the issue for this husband and wife, took that off their plate, and they dealt with that private ambulance company. But this is a big issue, and I'd love to get it straightened out. So
it is
thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging.
It is a very large issue. Thank you, Representative Matthews. An issue that I don't think any one of us would ever want to see anyone put in that position of having to make a choice, like the anecdote that you just relayed. Was there a further question, discussion? Seeing none, committee members, your pleasure. Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 6 to the House 4 with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel moves House Joint Memorial 6 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Seeing and hearing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. This is one that I definitely want to see carried to the floor. And Representative Matthews, if you'd be willing to
absolutely
do that.
Absolutely honored to do so, yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Esquivel.
Have we closed the work session on that?
No, I didn't know if you had anything further.
I want to add something.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on House Joint Memorial 6 and recognize Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple announcements. One is that we have established a flag fund through the Secretary of State, and let me tell you what that's about, folks. It came to my attention that we were not sending Oregon State flags to our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq and the war zone. We have worked with Secretary of State and Senator Johnson. We now have established ourselves with a flag fund there, so you can donate to that cause. It's about a $15,000 bill for 2 years, and I think it's well worth it, and I think it would be an awful tragedy that we did not come to this conclusion for our troops in country. I do want to add a personal touch to that. In 1969, when I was in Vietnam, I received a Oregon state flag and a very nice letter from then Secretary of State Clay Myers, and it's something I will never, ever forget, and I always greatly appreciated Secretary of State Myers for doing that. The second thing I'd like to let everyone know is we are having a signing of the Welcome Home Vietnam Vets Bill with the governor. It's in the signing room. It'll be March 30th at 10 a.m., so I would hope that we could all be there for that great document because it's a document long overdue.
Thank you very, very much, Co-Chair Esquivel, and you're absolutely right, and I would urge everyone who is available to attend that signing. It will be, it will mean an awful lot to a lot of folks who haven't been properly recognized, perhaps, in the past. Anything for the good of the order at this point? I'm not seeing anything. Jill, would you give us a rundown on the coming events?
For Tuesday, March 28th, we will be holding a public hearing on House Bill 3208, which has to do with the two additional veterans' homes. House Bill 3583, directing the Department of Veterans Affairs to contract with Lane Community College to study skilled nursing. Senate Bill 72, which clarifies the definition of disabled veteran for purposes of statutes relating to veterans' preferences. Senate Bill 73, which allows the Director of Veterans Affairs to assign more than one state employee to provide oversight of Second Oregon Veterans Home. Senate Bill 276, which states that the Legislative Assembly finds the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration, should be encouraged to export its expertise in conditions associated with military service to healthcare providers. Senate Bill 277, that clarifies that veteran or disabled veteran who applies for a vacant civil service position and seeks promotion is entitled to veterans preference.
Thank you very much, and as always, we may have a few more bills from this time that we had to pass over if we get the fiscals, and much of the of our work sessions will be dependent upon that from this point forward. With that, we stand adjourned. I want to thank everyone for coming today.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.